Hey, everyone out there, and thanks again for joining us here at ASAP Nowcast, the podcast for ASAP Now. Now, I love this time of year, spring, because for medicine, it's really exciting. There's match in March, and then there's graduation in the spring. And, you know, April is the sandwich month when you really get to ride the optimism of both of those events. And it's a great time where we think not only about our young new colleagues joining the field, but also about what career means to us. Because I don't know about you, but every match, I think back to my own match week, and every graduation, I think back to my own graduations and how it came to be that I landed where I am currently. So we do a lot of good career features in ASAP Now, in particular, the interesting creative careers that emergency physicians have, like space medicine, cruise ship medicine, NASCAR. But we don't necessarily spend a ton of time talking about career development and how you get to different parts of your career. And I thought this was the month to do it because spring is about that. It's about moving on to the next stage, and it's about growth and development and graduating, you know? So we invited a great friend to ASAP, Dr. Tom Mayer, who many of you may have seen actually speak at ASAP Scientific Assembly, if not another event, who's not only an emergency medicine physician passionate about emergency medicine, but also someone who's very passionate about leadership and development. And while that might feel a little bit of a warm and fuzzy topic for emergency medicine, I think it's an increasingly important one because leaders who are physicians in healthcare are more and more important to help battle some of the workforce issues and industry issues that we see. It is amazing to be a line doc, and I think the best leaders are frankly still people that work shifts because that's how you know what's going on. But I don't think leadership development, how to navigate the politics of some of these leadership roles, how to get there, how to put your name out there, how to show interest. I don't know that those are things that we commonly talk about. Like, certainly we don't talk about them in residency, and I don't know where you would formally talk about them later. So Dr. Tom Mayer was kind enough to spend some time with us to chat through not only his new book, which talks about leadership, but also some of the pearls that you can take with you about leadership, not only onto your next shift, because after all, we like to think that, we are a team-based sport, and I say think because I know some people disagree, but I very much believe that. And I think that we are a emergency medicine physician-led team sport every shift. But he also talks about pearls that you take not only to your next shift, but also to your next stage of career anytime. And here's kind of the punchline. It's all about frame of mind. So I love this talk with Dr. Tom Mayer. Come and check it out. Hey everyone at ASAP Now, we have a really special guest with us this month, and that is Dr. Tom Mayer, who is the, among many other titles, the NFL Players Association Medical Director and also Executive Vice President of Leadership for Logix Health, in addition to, of course, an ER doctor with many academic titles. So Dr. Mayer, thank you so much for joining us this month.
Oh, thanks for having me on. It's a real honor to be asked, and I look forward to chatting with you. I always learn from you every time I talk to you.
I feel the same way about you. And part of that is because you have so many titles. We were just chatting, you know, I wanted to hear about what all those hats are currently. You also have a book out. So obviously, in addition to, you know, your day job, you are also a speaker and a writer. You have a role with Logix, who I'm quite familiar with because, you know, Dr. Gronofsky is a great friend to ASAP Now and helping us know what happens with all things reimbursement. Your book talks about your time during 9/11 with the Pentagon. Like, give us a rundown of your career, if such a thing is possible to give a rundown. But help explain, like, how did you go from ER doctor to so much more?
It's a great question, and thank you for asking it. So what I do now is a combination of the NFL Players Association medical director. I've been doing that job for 23 years, more on that in a second. And I joined Mike Gronowski and Eli Berg with Logix several years ago because they wanted to expand from revenue cycle management into the broader ways to make intelligence matter, including this whole issue of leadership. So I'm often asked, how did you build your resume to get the job as the NFLPA medical director? And my answer is, I wasn't chosen for that job because of my resume. I was chosen for that job because on August 1st, 2001, Corey Stringer, a tackle for the Vikings, died impossibly of heat stroke at the Vikings training camp. And my best friend at the time, Gene Upshaw, Hall of Fame left guard for the Raiders, but also the executive director for the NFLPA, and most importantly, my best friend, called me up and said, look, you got to step up to the plate and do this job. And so he didn't choose me because of my resume. He chose me because he trusted me. And so my answer to the question of how did I get the job is, don't build resumes, build relationships. And I think that holds for every emergency physician, each of whom is a leader. More on that, I suspect. But also every person who's in an administrative position as well. It's not just the folks in the with the titles and the long titles after their names in the offices that are leading. It's all of us, each one of us. But at the core, I'm an emergency physician. That's where my deep joy is, has been, and will always be.
Now tell me a little bit about how you ended up with Logix and what you do with them as well. I know there's a lot of other people familiar with them, but you know, putting leadership with reimbursement doesn't always make sense to me, certainly. But I would love to hear how that happened.
Sure, and I don't want to speak for Mike Gronowski or Eli Berg, but they were in a position where they realized, as we all do, that no emergency department functions effectively without leaders. And not only that, but every single person, every emergency physician and every nurse, every member of the ED team is leading all the time. So you lead through the course of a shift, that bizarre unit of measure that we all still use, the shift. And in the course of that, it can be in the middle of the night, it can be on a holiday, it can be on a weekend. Each individual doctor is still leading their portion of the emergency department. And then more broadly, the whole emergency department has got to be led by a medical director, by a nursing manager, nursing leader, nursing director, whatever title is there. And so I think they wisely thought about, you know, we need to take more than just leading on the revenue cycle management side and think about how can we educate our clients with regard to the broader issues of leadership. So as you know, I've spoken at the ED Directors Academy for ASAP for many, many years. And it was really an attempt, I think, to broaden that, say, hey, let's give more depth, more context, more ability to say, you know, how do we move forward, particularly with the rates of burnout that we see, particularly with the level of boarding burden that we see that create all these massive stresses that really requires leading to be able to move through.
And you know, I think that's actually, like, I really do want to get into the leadership part of it. But let me back up. Let's also cover, I think, one really big role that I thought was interesting, especially as I was reading your new book, Leadership is Worthless, but Leading is Priceless, What I Learned from 9/11, the NFL, and Ukraine. Now, you had a role with the Pentagon as well. Like, I would also love to hear what that was. Let's first introduce all of our audience to it, and then I'll back up with a few other questions about just your career.
Sure. I was the command physician at the Pentagon on 9/11, 2001, along with two other physicians. That was a civilian rescue operation. At the time, I was the medical director of Fairfax County Fire and Rescue, which was one of the major entities that was responsible for that operation, along with Arlington and others that were there. And I was invited in by York Allen. We thought collectively that it was important to have EMS medical directors on site to help guide the operation, not just during the day of 9/11, but the night of 9/11. And it was a sobering experience. It was a challenge, and yet one that I think all of us who were there are very grateful for. There's a thousand things I learned from it, but one of the things that sticks out the most is I learned that we got to stop sucking up and start sucking down. And what I mean by that is not just some clever statement, but, you know, I was surrounded by generals when I was at the Pentagon, good men and women, those were their people in that burning building. And yet it wasn't safe to go in the building. So they all wanted to help. And that's what I mean by sucking up. You know, there was no use sucking up to the generals, to Secretary Rumsfeld when he came, to President Bush when he came the next day. It was sucking down to the structural engineers, to the paramedics, to the firefighters, to the Army engineers who were there to help us shore the building up in a way that we could safely get teams, including great ASAP member Dan Hanfling and others, into that inferno, frankly. So it was a real lesson in how we do what we do, and learning that, you know, it's not the C-suite that has the answers, it's the we suite. It's mm-hmm. all of us collectively.
I know, and I actually really love that catchphrase that you had in your book as well. But help me out a little. We have a ton of audience members that are young, like medical students, residents, fellows. And I love that we kind of jumped to the end in a way of your current titles, which are really impressive and I think gives a good scope of your career before we jump into leadership and what that means to ER doctors. But how does Dr. Tom Mayer, the, let's say, graduating resident, what happened that led him to, you know, the Dr. Tom Mayer that I'm talking to now? Like, what were the steps that got you there?
Yeah, it's a great question, and typically so. I mean, thank you very much. Number one, let me just briefly explain the title. The title, Leadership is Worthless, because it's a noun. It's just something that you say, and anyone can say anything anytime. But leading is priceless precisely because it's a verb. It's what you do. All of us, medical student, graduating resident, you know, junior attending, line emergency physician, medical director, chairman, every single person in an emergency department is leading all day, every day. And so the leader you're looking for is you. The answers are not above us in some C-suite. The answers aren't with the people with the titles. The answers are within us and among us. And so every time that we put on a white coat and put on a stethoscope and undertake the holy work, the holy calling of taking care of patients, we're seeking out our deep joy. And to quickly explain that, when our kids were younger, we had three boys, now young men. When they were younger, I used to take them to school every day, and I'd say precisely the same thing to them, which is one more step in the journey of discovering where your deep joy intersects the world's deep needs. I swear I said this to them. They prefer to take the bus, as you might guess. They don't want to hear that. But my point is, you've got to start with your deep joy, not the world's deep needs. All of us chose emergency medicine because it's our deep joy. It's what we love to do. It's what drives us. And so if I don't know that we're going to talk about burnout, but burnout's very simple. It's the inability to feel your deep joy. So my advice to graduating medical students, to graduating residents, fellows, to anyone is identify your deep joy. Write it down, own it, live it, and personify it, lead it every day. And continue to understand that, as I say, the leader you're looking for is you. There's nothing more toxic than calling someone a future leader, as if you and I were the leaders. We have the mantle of leadership, and we will confer it on and only on those we choose if they live up to our expectations. What could be more satanic, demonic, demeaning, and toxic than that? In fact, we need to encourage people, you are a leader. You are already a leader. Don't aspire to be one. Accept the fact and embrace the fact that you are, and then inspire others to because I think that's what we uniquely as emergency physicians do.
And I think you have a really good point that emergency medicine is a team sport. So you are the leader as the ER physician, no matter how small you might feel your microcosm is, right? But we work as a team, like we know that. I think there's so many stories of burnout, as you mentioned, which I think we actually should talk about, because people feel, and I say people, but I mean emergency physicians feel like they are a cog in the shift machine. Like they're like, yep, the admin want me to do this. I have to keep moving meat so I can't even spend time talking to the patients. And there's only one nurse, but there should be three nurses and so on. So it feels very disempowering. Like what is the answer from, you know, a leading perspective when you feel that? And frankly, probably objectively, all those things are true. You probably are understaffed. You probably do have to move meat. Like, you know, we know that happens.
Again, the so first of all, definitions drive solutions. So making sure we understand the definition. To me, burnout is simply the inability to feel your deep joy. However, let's just take it down to a ratio. And the ratio is very simple. It's job stressors divided by adaptive capacity. Some people would call that resiliency. We can talk about that if you'd like. So if I want to decrease burnout, what do I do? If I want to decrease the inability to feel my deep joy, I either have to decrease the job stressors or increase the adaptive capacity of me and my team, or some combination of both, preferably. So we work both ends of that, if you will. And I just think people have made burnout far more complicated than it is, so that you begin to say, hey, okay, I can't control the world, but I can control my world. I can control my portion of this world. For example, you mentioned, you know, we're two nurses down. There's two ways to think about that. I can say to the charge nurse, again, seriously, you can't get nurses here. Is that going to help? No, that's going to increase job stressors, both for them and frankly for me. Or I can say, that's all right, we're down, but we're not out. But we're a team. Let's pull together as a team and let's get this done. Figure out how we can make things happen with what we've got on this ship. Teddy Roosevelt, I didn't use this quote in the book, said, do the best you can wherever you are and do it now. And that's what, that should be the motto of emergency medicine, I think, to be able to deal with what we have to. The resiliency thing, what it concerns me to use that term. That's why I use adaptive capacity, because if I say to an audience of emergency physicians, nurses, or preferably combinations of both, the reason you're so burned out is you're not resilient enough, they're going to think, they may not say it, but they're going to think, I'm the problem? I am the problem? The problem is this crazy environment we're in. And so I'm a little hesitant to use that term, because I think it's really adaptive capacity. And then finally, we have to revise the system. The way we're working isn't working, and that means we have to think, act, and innovate. And innovation occurs at the speed of trust, and that occurs by trying a lot of different things to say, how are we going to deal with the burdens that are there, the job stressors that are there, with a view towards decreasing those.
And I think, you know, when you say innovate, advocate goes with that a lot. But you make a really good point that the think and act part, like the real time, what are you doing on shift to lead your team when things are really hard and maybe even you're not feeling it? You know, I do think that is the leading part of the team. Like that is why ER physicians lead the team in the ER, because I think we get to be the ones that set that tone, even if it feels like we're just setting it with this little microcosm of, you know, the three nurses and the two techs that are in your department at that moment, and it doesn't necessarily trickle to, you know, admin and the powers that be. Like, I think that's the frustration, is in the moment you lead, then you go home, and then you just feel like it's another grind, you know, like it's just another day of, you know, making things hard on shift. And then, you know, God bless if you get a nasty email from the admin that you didn't move fast enough, like, oof, like that's when you see all the complaints on, like, you know, Facebook groups and so on of burnout, really.
Yeah. To your point, you know, I always say think about leading in a radically different way, meaning it's something we all do, and it's not something you say, it's something you do. Mm-hmm. Act on that within a week, and I hope everybody acts upon all of your podcasts within a week, because otherwise, why? It's entertaining, but how is it going to change what I'm going to do differently? And then three is to innovate. So simple example, you pick up a chart. We don't pick up charts anymore. You know, there are electrons, as you well know, but the old saying from when there actually were physical charts, and you see that somebody's waiting 2 hours to see you. You know, if I walk in the room and I say, I'm Dr. Mayer, I'm the emergency physician. First of all, let me apologize that it took so long to get you back to a room. But I'm here now and I'm focused on you, and I want to make sure we take great care of you. What can we do, we, the team, to make this an excellent visit? And you might say, well, I have to take Zofran before I can say that. And you might be right, but it's better than not even acknowledging that they had to wait. You know, when we admit patients to the hospital and we know that they're going to be sitting there for hours, much better to tell them that up front. Number one, let's make sure that we don't call them ED boarders. They're not ED boarders, they're hospital boarders. It's not an ED problem. It's where the problem resides, but it's not the fault of the emergency department. I learned that from Glenn Druckenbrod, our medical director at Inova Fairfax Medical Center. In 2004, he said, stop calling them ED boarders. And we need to do that. You know, make it accountable. Change the system so that the nursing supervisor, or whatever you call it in your hospital, when a patient is going to end up in our hallways for more than, choose a number, I would say 1 hour waiting for a bed. Somebody would say, that's ridiculous. It's got to be two. Fine. Make sure the nursing supervisor physically comes to the ED, looks that patient in the eye and says, I'm running this hospital. I'm going to get you a bed. And you know, I mean, what happens when they do that? They find beds because yeah. It's personal. You know, and thank God ASAP did not invite me to this boarding conference that they had, because I say thank God, because I would have said exactly what I thought, which is this: to all the potentates, all the leadership folks that were assembled appropriately so by ASAP, I would have said, listen, you know, would it be okay if your wife, if your husband, if your son, if your daughter, if your mom, if your dad sat in a hallway on a hard stretcher, can't even go to the bathroom, for 12 hours, would that be all right? Because if it wouldn't be all right for your relative, why is it all right for my patients? And that's why they didn't invite me to that meeting.
Yeah, and I think there's cojones to that too, which I think goes into leading that you actually touch on. Like, I would love to hear, like, if you had, because I think this talks about leading and what that means for, you know, the frontline ER doctor in a industry that right now can feel really tough for whatever reason, burnout, corporate practice of medicine, et cetera. I would love to hear if you had, you know, a minute to give every frontline ER doctor a pep talk before they walk into what's going to be like a tough night shift. What would you tell them about leading? And because I think a huge part of it is attitude shift, right? You're talking thinking, acting. Like, this is a lot of attitude in the framework of what you walk into a shift or work or whatever in your life with.
Sure. I'd tell them, number one, you're about to enter holy ground, the holy ground where healing occurs. Even healing for, you know, your child doesn't have meningitis, it's an ear infection. The holy ground of, you know, yes, it's broken, but we're going to splint it. And we're going to take care of your pain and refer you to an orthopedist. The holy ground where our deep joy intersects those wonderful patients, none of whom wanted to be there. So I tell them that you're about to enter holy ground. Number two, seize the day, lead from the front. You know, be the doctor you imagined yourself to be. You know, Gandhi said, you know, be the change you seek in the world. Or, you know, there go my people. I am their leader. I must follow them. You know, for that shift, for that time, put, as we'd say in the NFL, put on your game face and go out and get her done. And then finally, you know, I shouldn't say finally, the nurses are suffering as much as we are. It's they're a part of a team. Bill Belichick says it very well, that talent sets the floor of a team, but character sets the ceiling of a team. So go out there and show your character on this. You know, you don't have to show how smart you are. Show your character in terms of how you're dealing with it. Don't be afraid to say, I'm sorry you had to wait. I'm sorry we don't have a bed upstairs. And let them know. Now, and then finally, I think at the end of a shift, go sit in your car, take public transportation, wherever, however it is you get to and from work, and take a moment to pause, reflect, and reconsider. And ask yourself, what did I leave in there? What was the legacy I left in there? And part of that legacy is the interpersonal, most of it, frankly, is the interpersonal reactions, how you dealt with the nurses, how you dealt with the patients, how you dealt with distraught families, or enraged families or enraged patients that say, what do you mean you don't have a hospital bed? You know, what do you call yourself here? And be able to diffuse that, because that's part of the deep joy as well. And then finally, it's very, very important, I think, to think, I've got to change the system. What am I going to recommend to the admins, to the C-suite, to the potentates, in order to say, how do we change things? Because Kirk Jensen and I coined a term, hardwiring flow. And all it means is stop doing stupid stuff and start doing smart stuff. So I think regardless of the level or how long you've worked there or title, lack of title, being able to say, okay, I'm going to recommend tomorrow, think, act, and innovate. Tomorrow, I'm going to recommend we change the following things. Like, for example, the nursing supervisor coming down and saying, I'm in charge of this hospital tonight, this weekend, whatever. I'm going to find you a bed. So specific recommendations on how to do it. Because, Amy, I think what we have to do in emergency medicine is create hope. We create hope for our patients, but we also have to create hope for ourselves. We have to create the hope that things don't have to be this way. How do they get better? And the answer is little by little by little.
Yeah, and I love how you phrased that, because you really did go through think, act, and innovate. To me, the innovation part a lot of times applies to some of our physician leaders. And what I'm alluding to is, you know, the people who are the physicians who are, you know, both frontline and also like quote admin, right? Whether they're medical directors or higher or something else like that. Because I think they take the hope, sometimes lack of hope, but they take the hope and lack of hope and turn it into actionable items. And to me, that's the innovate part. And that's the really leading and improving things part. Because that's, you know, that's hard work too.
Yeah. I think that when you think, why innovate? The way we're working isn't working. Just look around the emergency department. It's clear it isn't working. Look around the break room, and nurses and docs have their heads in their hands and, you know, are ready to weep, not just because of a tough, unsuccessful resuscitation, but because of the frustrations of, you know, how many times do we leave a shift and come back and see the same patient in the hallway waiting for a bed the next shift? That's demoralizing both for the patient and for us. So we have to do things differently. I don't think there's any question about that. And the C-suite doesn't, I've been in the C-suite most of my life. You rely on the C-suite to fix the problems, to identify the stupid stuff and innovate the smart stuff. We're going to screw it up. And the reason is we don't know what the work is. You know, the people who do the work know what the work is. So I think it's just that, it's creating hope. And, you know, the last thing we ever want to be is, I capitalize it, the boss, because the boss is just somebody who is convinced that he's the most important person in the room. Whereas the leader is knows into the depth of their soul that their job is to make everyone else in the room feel like they're the most important person in the room. That's a different job.
Yep. And I think it puts together the importance of listening, which is a part of leading. I think we have that when we listen to our patients. I think we certainly have that when we listen to our colleagues, and, you know, those colleagues include other members of the team, nurses, techs, et cetera, because it puts together not only compassion, right, but it puts together interconnectedness on the team. And it also gets you to real solutions if you consider all the stakeholders.
Oh, absolutely. And if you think about whoever your best A-team members are, and everybody knows who they are, you watch them, pay attention to them, Why is it that you love seeing their name on the schedule that you're going to work with? Whether it's, you know, docs, nurses, PAs, APPs, MPs, you know, and watch them. How do they interact? You know, they probably actually take a little bit of time to sit down as opposed to standing up, which doesn't take any more time, but, you know, alters the angle, changes the plane. So you're eye to eye with the patient. And you know, you start to notice that collectively, we do a heck of a good job. I'm never surprised when there's a problem in an emergency department. I'm surprised there aren't more problems because, and I think the reason there aren't is because there's so many wonderful people whose deep joy still resides in emergency medicine.
Yeah, and that's, I think, something really positive to look forward to in the industry. Now, Tom, this has been just an amazing talk. Like, I think it's almost a disservice to only give, you know, 30 minutes to a conversation as important as this. So I want to, you know, encourage everyone to check out your new book where you touch on a lot of these points. Leadership is worthless, but leading is priceless. It was a easy and also very enjoyable read. I want to let you close, though, with just last takeaways for our audience. Again, our peers of ER doctors, there's a lot of med students, fellows, residents, late career, early career. What are just your, you know, thoughts that you want to leave them with on this podcast?
Well, first of all, thanks, Amy, for having me on. It's a real honor. I appreciate it. As you can tell, and you already knew, but your listeners are picking up, my wife says my next book should be titled Everyone's Entitled to My Opinion. So thanks for your forbearance with that. But what I would say to everyone listening is this. You know, I love the job you do. I love the job you do. But more importantly, in some respects, I love you for doing that job. It's one of the hardest but most satisfying jobs on earth. And if in some small way I can help in any way, reach out to me. Love to talk to anybody anytime if in any way you think I can be of help.
That's a super generous offer, Dr. Mayer. So I want to thank you again for not only that generous offer, but also for taking time out of your very busy day with your many very busy hats to come and chat with us. And again, anyone with questions, comments, etc., feel free to ping us via ASAP Now. Or again, Dr. Mayer has, you know, made a kind offer to help as well. Thanks again, Dr. Mayer.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Dr. Tom Mayer, because we hope you guys in the audience got something that's a takeaway for you, no matter what stage of career you're in. Now, you can apply leadership not only to your next shift, but to your career, your side hustle, or even your advocacy. So remember that these pearls apply to your roles in organizations like ASAP as well. And that's also a place that you can innovate and move forward and establish and show your leadership. Now, that is it for us this month. But as always, the podcast is just a tiny microcosm of what ASAP Now has to offer you. So the paper copy of ASAP Now is not only in your mailboxes, but also the features are online as well. So be sure to check out the full magazine. Some of my favorite highlights this month are a piece on dizziness and how to not miss posterior strokes, post-arrest temperature management, because I remember when I was in residency, therapeutic cooling was all the rage, and maybe it's not anymore. We have a great feature with a toxicology case, and there's also a summary on the match. Now, tweet us if you got an idea at ASAP Now, or feel free to tweet me direct at Amy Faith Ho. As always, we love to hear your thoughts and feedback to keep you tuning in. So thanks to everyone for joining us again on the podcast this month, and we will see you all next time.